podcast for this Monday, whatever the hell the date it is. I don't even know.
It's the 31st of August.
You had to think about it even.
No, I had to look down at my computer.
Oh, okay. McCowan here, Shannon there, and the cat has dragged in one of our great friends. The coach himself, Jack Armstrong, is with us. How are you, coach?
Bob, I'm doing great, John. Always a pleasure, fellas. Happy to be on with you guys.
Well, nice to see you. We watched finally game one several days late, postponed because of the actions of the players in Orlando. And we're not here really to talk about that. We spent some time discussing that last week. We're here mostly to talk about the series against the Boston Celtics and the performance in game one, which was, I think, Jack, you'd have to concede, about as abysmal a performance as we've seen from the Raptors for a long, long time. Yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you consider the fact that they've lost two games in Orlando since the restart, and both have been against the Celtics. And both times they've really had a difficult time from start to finish playing at the level we're accustomed to seeing them play. So, you know, and the fact of the matter is they've played the Celtics now five times this year. And in three of those five games, quite frankly, just haven't been in it. So, you know, the question now going into a game, in game two, is this a pattern that's going to play itself out even further? Or is this something that has been revealed enough to the Raptors now where they can do something to fix it? So your guess is as good as mine, but nonetheless, I think there's got to be some area for concern right now based upon what we've seen, not only yesterday, but more importantly, in the five games they've played against them.
I think the biggest concern for me would be that this team, in Orlando, when they've been playing in Orlando, has shot so well. You know, even from 3-point world, and yesterday it was a disaster from the opening tip, a disaster.
Yeah, it was difficult. They just didn't shoot the ball well, and as you guys know, there's going to be nights where you don't. It's the other elements of the game then they're going to carry you through, at least to keep you competitive. And to the Celtics' credit, I thought they did a great job moving the ball, getting open shots. They shot the ball well on corner threes. They were incredibly effective and efficient. They had six guys in double figures. So to me, I think the Raptors overwhelmingly don't get their personality as a team from their offense. They get it from their defense. I thought the frustration early on of their offense affected how they defended. I mean, how many times do you see the Raptors give up 39 points and let a team shoot close to 60% in the first quarter? I mean, that's just uncharacteristic for them. But I think they played like a frustrated group that was really pressing yesterday. And I think they have to – this might sound simplistic, but they got to get off to a good start in game two. And they got to play with the lead. I think they got to play with a little bit of cushion. These guys have had their number a little bit. And as you know, sometimes just having that margin of error against somebody that you're still kind of feeling your way out against is going to be important.
And I wanted to address that point, because I was going to say, you know, we talk a lot about horses for courses, and the Raptors have not played well against this Celtic team over the last while. Do you think this is just a curious coincidence, or do you think there's something about the Celtics and the way they play and the kind of team they are that gives the Raptors trouble?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both there. I would say that we'll know in the next two games, after game three, I think we'll have a much better feel if this truly is an incredibly bad development and a bad pattern for Toronto, or if it's something that you just got to keep searching for matchups and keep searching for answers. Nick Nurse, in my opinion, as is Brad Stevens, those two guys are two of the best in the business at kind of navigating the choppy waters, not only game to game, but more importantly, in game. And that's a sign of a really good coach. So I think there is some concern there. The thing that the Celtics do well, I think they defend in the half court well. They get back quickly in transition. They don't let you run on them. And they got exceptional quickness. When you look at Tatum and Brown, they're long, they're athletic, they're quick. Kemba Walker might not be the greatest defender on earth, but he's a smart, savvy defender. Daniel Tice was wonderful for them at the five spot. Williams off the bench played great. They were young, springy, athletic, quick to the ball, made plays. And I thought Marcus Smart filling in for Gordon Hayward in the starting lineup was terrific. I mean, the guy makes five threes in the game, and he gives it to you on both ends. He's not as talented an offensive player as Gordon Hayward, but he might be a better fit against this feisty Raptor backcourt. So to me, I think for the Raptors, dealing with that quickness, being able to make quick snap decisions offensively and get the ball moving. And a guy like Pascal Siakam right now, as you can see, is clearly fighting himself right now, really struggling.
So you beat me to it, because I was going to ask about Siakam. You're a hockey dad. You know that playoff hockey changes. Playoff basketball changes too. This is another level for Siakam when he's the number one choice offensively down low. And this is bigger pressure for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, and John, I'll use the hockey analogy. I think he's gripping the stick a little too tight right now. I think he's playing a little bit uptight. I think he's pressing a little bit. I think he's, you know, and you made the point about being the number one option. I don't think the way they play per se is that, hey, he is our number one option. Some nights he is. Some nights it's Fred VanVleet. Some nights it's Kyle Lowry. Sometimes they really focus on getting Serge Ibaka going in the screen or roll, or Norm Powell's got a hot hand, and they really look to run a lot of stuff to get him going. So I think there's a lot of the pressure that I think he feels with Kawhi Leonard being departed and being that guy that feels like he's got to carry that mantle. And I'll use the golf analogy. I think he's a guy right now that isn't playing like a scratch golfer. He's 10 yards to the right or 10 yards to the left off the fairway. He can't get it to the green in two. He gets on the green, he's missing easy putts. He's fighting himself right now. Some of it's in his head. But I think ultimately what it comes down to is you got to simplify the game a little bit and try to be that guy. I think his best possessions yesterday offensively when he got both feet in the traditional painted area, caught it, and took the ball strong and let the game come to him. He's struggling shooting the ball from three. So I think he has to look at, where do I dial back? And now where do I amplify my other efforts? Mm-hmm. I think he can be, I mean, what did he have, 2 or 3 rebounds yesterday? I think this is a guy that can get you 8, 9, 10 rebounds a night. Where are you on the glass? He's got to be an impactful defender all over the place. He's got great switchability and range in his defensive ability. Create plays for your team. Get out in the running game. Get some easy scoring chances. And then the harder stuff will come to you.
Do you think he tries to be too much of an individual when he gets his hands on the ball? Usually, you know, we talk about guys who are stop guys who, you know, when the ball gets in their hands, it doesn't usually go anywhere else. They're going to try and make something happen. I get the feeling that he operates sometimes outside the flow of the offense. Your thoughts?
I think that's a legitimate concern. I think there are times that they have really encouraged him and featured him to be that during the regular season. Now there comes a point where you have to responsibly, as a player, say, when am I bouncing it one too many times? And when am I, you know, so I just got to, it's a balance. There's no doubt that they have tried to, I wouldn't say feature him, but they have tried to throw him in the deep end a little bit more this year to get him to grow, to get him to learn, to get him to mature. I think overwhelmingly, he's done a really nice job with that. But the problem is right now he's struggling with his game. So therefore, when you're struggling, you start searching a little bit more to find solutions for yourself because you're fighting yourself. And therefore, the other four guys are standing there going, okay, I get it. You don't have an option right now. Get rid of it. So I think there's definitely a balance that he has to find. And I will say this too, and I think we haven't seen this yet, but I think you'll see maybe Nick Nurse and his coaching staff try to dial up a few plays here and there. I call it spoon feeding a guy, manufacturing a positive shot opportunity,
right.
Put him in a play sequence that gets him a high percentage shot that he doesn't have to do a whole lot. You know, come off the screen, catch it, make a shot. And that loosens things up a little bit. So I think some of that, when you have a guy that's struggling as a coaching staff, is you got to choreograph a play or two here to help get him going. On the other hand, to your point, Bob, there's no doubt there are times where when you have a young player, and he's still a young player, tries to kind of work his way through it, and other guys look around and say, come on, keep it going. So he's got to find that balancing act.
You know, Jack, you talked earlier about the team and usually had a spark. And I would point at Kyle Lowry as being that spark more than anybody else. But when you think about what his ankle was like, what did you think of him yesterday? And can he maintain that spark?
You know, John, I thought that was probably the most encouraging thing about the game yesterday, which is a goofy thing to say. But the fact that the Raptors walked off the court yesterday, even though they got their tail kicked, the fact that Kyle Lowry played, and I thought kind of got him back in the game a few times, tried to get him back in the game at the very least. I was really encouraged by how he looked. And going into game two, I think that's a positive. And considering the fact that the Celtics didn't have Gordon Hayward, they were at more of a distinct disadvantage than Toronto was. Toronto had their top seven guys. So to me, I think that is an encouraging thing that he was able to play. I just give the Celtics a lot of credit. They did a great job on Fred VanVleet. And obviously, they are swarming on Pascal Siakam, and the Raptors got to figure that out. And I'll say this, and I said this going into the series, I really felt that a guy like Marc Gasol and OG Anunoby would be the crucial keys to the series for the Raptors. And I think right now you look at a guy like Marc Gasol and you look at Daniel Theis, you know, obviously body of work and resume career-wise. I mean, Gasol has an accomplished career. He has struggled against the Celtics this year. And I think that's something that when you start looking at maybe possible moves that Nick Nurse has to make, I think they got to look long and hard at Marc Gasol's efficiency in this matchup. I think if there's any Raptor that has a lot of pressure on him, I think a lot of people would probably be focusing on Siakam. Me personally, I'm looking at Marc Gasol in the first 5 minutes of the game tomorrow. He's got to play a lot better.
Well, look, and there's so many ways and angles we could go at on the Gasol situation. And I want to bring Ibaka into this question because he's the alternative. You and I, Jack, and John, you know, grew up in an era where a big man played the post. He played with his back to the basket. He played down low. He had certain things that he did. I get the game has changed. I get you play differently now. But Marc Gasol is not a true post guy, at least at this point in his career. And this is a team that doesn't run a lot of backdoor slashes, cuts across through the paint, in order to get the ball down low. Ibaka is better at putting the ball on the floor. I think he's better down low. He's more inclined to be down there. I wonder whether there comes a point, and I mean, we're talking about a great player in Gasol, but does there come a point where you start thinking about giving Ibaka more time on the floor in place of Gasol? Not what we saw yesterday with both of them out there at the same time.
I think Nick Nurse will do anything and everything to win. And not concerned in any way, shape, or form with ruffling anyone's feathers whatsoever. I think he'll do whatever it takes to win. If Gasol is effective and gets back on track and can play at a high level and be a positive, a solution on the floor against the Celtics, he'll play. If he's ineffective, I'm sure he'll give him an opportunity each night to see what he's got. And if he doesn't have it, he'll pull the plug and he'll go more with a Serge Ibaka. It wouldn't surprise me if they decide to go super small and, you know, mix different lineups in and do that. They could even decide to go big, which they did yesterday a few times. But I think the Celtics' quickness is something that is a hard, they're a harder group to guard because not only are they quick, but they're skilled. I mean, when you look at Tatum, Brown, and Kemba, they all three average over 20 points a game. Marcus Smart can put it on the floor. You know, they have a lot of skill. So playing big against them puts you in some cross matchups that could be a challenge. But being around Nick Nurse, I don't see him being somebody that's married to any script. I think he's your traditional wartime general where he goes into a situation, and if things don't work, he is willing to throw the entire battle plan out and go something different. And I think that's one of his great strengths as a coach. So I think he'll go in to tomorrow's game with a game plan, but nonetheless, if it's not working, he'll pull the plug on it and go somewhere else.
You know, you had to wonder whether the 7 days off, I mean, obviously affected one team more than the other. But you have to wonder with his age, whether the 7 days off affected Gasol more than anybody else. That's the one thing I would say.
Yeah, no, that's a legitimate point, and that could be said in defense of him. There's no doubt that that's why I think, you know, going into game two, if I had one guy, I have confidence that Siakam in some way, shape, or form will figure it out. And I think that they need him because of – let's take the offense out of the way. I mean, against the Celtics, you need an athletic, long, rangy defender who's got the ability to switch positions. He does that. You got to have a guy that can go get it on the glass and who's got length and hops. He can do those things. So he's going to still be so important in this series. And I think they'll find ways to get him going offensively. A guy like Gasol, when I look at Robert Williams III and a guy like Daniel Theis, though that position from the Celtics yesterday played really well. And you got to get more out of your five spot. And if he's not going to give you a lot, then you got to look and say, do I change how my lineup looks altogether? So I think that would be to me something that they got to consider.
Who does Theis remind you of? Theis has to remind you. Every time I saw him on the court yesterday, I said, "Guy, he reminds me of somebody." Is there somebody that from your past around the NBA that he would be like? I mean, he was a little Rodman-like at times. He was out there doing what he had to do.
Well, I don't know if I could put my finger on exactly who he's like, but I could say this. The guy is mobile. He's athletic. He's quick. He's got a good second jump. He's got multiple effort in his game. And he's one of those guys that is completely and overwhelmingly bought into what Brad Stevens is preaching. He understands when he's out there, hey, man, I'm the number five option. And my job is to do all the grunt work, screen, right, roll, get on the offensive boards, be physical, and just do whatever I can, sacrifice everything of myself for the greater good of my four teammates that I'm playing with on the floor. And he's young, and he's got some burst in his game. I think a guy like Gasol plays the same way in terms of his mindset is, I'm going to do the same things to help my teammates, but this guy's a younger player. And the game's a little quicker. So I think he fits the frenetic pace that the Celtics are trying to play.
We're with Jack Armstrong on the podcast. Look, it's so easy for all of us to get caught up in one game and one really bad performance by the Toronto Raptors, and maybe a nearly perfect performance by the Boston Celtics. We'll find out if they can repeat that. It's a natural reaction to get all of a sudden panicked about it. The truth of the matter is this team has been the best team in the NBA over the last 35, 40 games. And as good as anybody, during the Orlando confinement. But the one thing that does come up from time to time, Coach, is this team becoming a little too three happy? And it's probably justifiable given the fact that they've been winning a lot of games and making a reasonably high percentage of threes. But do you as a coach feel sometimes they're just too inclined to take the three?
Bob, the whole league's three happy. What are you talking about?
I get it. I get it. But this is a team that has two big guys that can score. They have a guy who can go to the basket in Siakam. They have other things that they can do. They don't have to just shoot threes. But you've got all of them shooting threes. All of them. It's not one or two guys taking, the bull by the horns. And yeah, the point guards probably take more than anybody else. But Jack, just respond.
My response would be, to a degree of what John just said, the league is dramatically different now. I do think that there are times in critical possessions that sometimes a bucket at the rim and sometimes two free throws can do the job, even though it's one less point. Sometimes it puts your defense in a better position, and sometimes it makes a statement to your opponent that I can score anytime I want in here when I need to. I'm gonna shoot the three a lot, but I can get at the rim and score there. The Celtics don't have a lot of rim protection, but I give Brad Stevens credit. Going with Williams instead of Cantor off the bench does give them rim protection because he's the one guy on their team that can block shots. So for the Raptors, I think there is an Achilles heel there that the Celtics have that at times you need to exploit. The question is, can you get to that point? And I think you have to find ways with a guy like Ibaka when he's in the game, not only the pick and pop, but get him rolling to the basket and getting him at the rim. And then a guy like Siakam, I would agree there are times that rather than handling the ball and bouncing it three or four times on the perimeter, getting to the rim. Again, it's a balancing act. But on the other hand, give the Celtics credit. When Siakam got the ball in the post, they were sending a second and third guy his way. Now he's got to get the ball to the rim and finish. And if he's not going to do that, he's got to get it out. They got to make the second pass out of the double and then get a clean three. So, there is no doubt that you look at the Celtics yesterday, they were hunting down threes like crazy. Sure they were hunting down. They were hunting down corner threes like you wouldn't believe. They did a great job getting the ball to the weak side and getting into the weak side corner where the Raptors couldn't get there. So it's a chess match. And I always say this when you see two really good coaches on the floor, and I respect the heck out of both of these guys. This is turbo chess. And these guys will make adjustments in game and game to game. And literally, when I'm watching these games, I am so riveted on the switches and the matchups and play calls and all the little adjustments that it's really, really cool to watch.
How do you make adjustments to your transition game then? Because let's face it, the Celtics did a magnificent job on the Raptors' transition game.
I think what you try to do as best as possible is you got to be more effective defensively per possession. And I think even though the Raptors did a better job yesterday turning over the Celtics, there were just a number of possessions where they were on their heels. I think they really got to get into the ball even harder. I think they got to really put more pressure and direct the ball where they want it to go. Again, they got to get the Celtics on their heels. I don't think they did that. Defense is the disposition to dominate. You got to dictate terms. You got to make the guy uncomfortable. I don't think they did that yesterday. And I think when you do that, now you force missed shots, you get it off the glass, you pitch it out. When you force turnovers, you do the same thing. Your offense, your running game comes from your defense. And to me, I don't think their mojo yesterday was there. I think they let their offensive inefficiency yesterday impact the level of just all-out sellout in terms of how they played defensively. I expect that to improve dramatically. Again, to your point, John, though, this team is really hard to score against because they're only going to send one guy to the glass. They're going to send Tice to the glass, and the other four guys are going to peel back, and therefore, you're not going to get a lot of man advantage opportunities against them. You got to try to pitch it ahead quick, see if you can get something. If not, you got to run your half-court offense better, and the concern all along has been, without Kawhi, how good can this team be in their half-court offense without a stone-cold killer at the back end of the shot clock? And I think this series will be a bigger test now to see if they have that in them.
One of the other things I wanted to address, maybe shouldn't have left it to this point, but the beginning of the game, and you talked about it on the air last night, but at the beginning of the game, the officials, for reasons that are inexplicable to me, called this game about as tight, well, too tight. It was sort of ridiculous. I mean, it was almost like they were expecting there to be a fist fight if they didn't call fouls. And, of course, there's no real animosity between these two teams. They are competitive, but there's no real history of overt violence in here. But some of the calls were just extraordinary. And I wonder what – and most of them against the Raptors. And I'm not trying to be a homer. I think
You're a homer.
Well, I think – well, if you watch the game, John, instead of watching some hockey game, from 1967.
Bob, you have to know that you had to know there was no hockey games on when the Raptors.
If you listen to what I said, did you watch a hockey game from 1967? I know there was no game on, but I know you also have all those video things back there.
Is that the last time the Leafs won a Stanley Cup? By the way, 67.
Yeah, as best anybody can recall. And none of us will be here when they win another one. But having said all that. What do you make? What was the agenda with the fouls at the, especially at the beginning of the first, 10, 15 minutes of the game?
Well, you used a great word that I agree with. I think there was an agenda. Was it an agenda against the Raptors? I don't think it was an agenda against the Raptors. I think the whistle hurt the Raptors, but there's no question. These officials came into the game yesterday saying these are two of the best defensive teams in the league. They're very into the ball. They're very physical. Let's make sure we set the tone here early,
right,
that we're going to make sure guys' hands are off each other. We're going to take away all the clutching and grabbing. We're going to make sure this game's played cleanly. And I think in some ways that, to your point, Bob, there's no question that the calls, if you are a fan of one team or another, I think if you're a Raptor fan, you felt like you got the short end of the stick on some of the calls. Am I saying that from a standpoint of saying I'm a homer? No, I think some of the calls that were called on the Raptors yesterday were questionable, dubious. Nonetheless, I think there was a point of emphasis and an honorable, correct point of emphasis saying, this is how these teams play. We're going to make sure that they're going to play the game in a clean way where we're not going to get clutching and grabbing and fouling on every play. So I think they tried to establish that, but it definitely hurt the Raptors. And you know what? I think it affected the Raptors. You could clearly see it there.
I agree. Yeah,
I agree. They got bent out of shape a little bit about it, and it affected their offense. It affected their defense. It affected, like, I think they were trying to hit a grand slam with nobody on base sometimes. They were trying to catch up and get it all back on one play, and I think all that frustration came to a head. So, again, I think games 2 and 3 will have a better balance of kind of what the personality of this series truly is.
Well, and that's when you talk about agenda, you have to wonder if that's something, an edict from the league office to say, hey, listen, these two teams are so good and can get physical. Can they carry that agenda early in each game to set that tone by the officials for the rest of the series? That to me, so Tuesday, that might be one of the key storylines, is how will they officiate early on? Will it be the same as they did in game one?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And here's the other thing, John, I think, which is really something important. You got to ultimately adjust your game to the officials, not the other way around. Because as much as, you know, we talk to officials about, you know, you gotta use good judgment, this, that, the other thing, those three guys with the whistles still dictate how a game is played. So ultimately, you have to adjust to that. So ultimately, I think if you're the Raptors, to me, you got to come out the aggressor in game two. You got to put them on their heels. You got to be so overwhelmingly into them that the officials have no choice but to say, well, guess what? The team that's usually more aggressive usually gets the more of the benefit of the doubt.
Well, it's one game. It wasn't a very pretty game. What we don't know, none of us, is whether it meant anything. Maybe the Celtics played great and the Raptors played like crap, and that won't happen again over the course of the series. Or maybe the Celtics actually do have the Raptors' number, and we're not going to start to find that out until game two tomorrow.
Hey, Bob, just before we go, John Thompson, the great Georgetown coach, passed away this morning. Jack, you would have crossed paths with Thompson on so many different ways, whether it was on a court or somewhere in a gym. Your thoughts on what John Thompson meant to basketball?
Yeah, no, I crossed paths with John many times over the years. And actually, one of my former players at Niagara, Akbar Wahid, is an assistant now at Georgetown for Patrick Ewing. He was there as well as an assistant for John Thompson III. So, and obviously during my coaching career, I would see John on the road recruiting and at different coaching meetings and clinics and all sorts of stuff over the years. So, John was an incredible advocate for social justice and all the issues that are going on right now. And he was an amazing voice and a force in that movement. The other thing I would say about John as well is that I still use this anytime I speak to young people about it, the value of education. And I used to always say this when I coached in a recruiting visit, the home visit, I would say, these next 4 years of your life affect how you do the next 40. So it's the springboard of your life, the foundational element of being an educated person is such an important thing. And I would always use what John Thompson did as the coach at Georgetown. John's office, he had a deflated basketball in his office. And he used to say to his players, sooner or later, the air is going to come out of the ball. And the question, the challenge I have for you is, have you used that ball or has that ball used you? Because sooner or later, everyone is told at some point, hey, man, you're done. Your playing career is over. And now, are you an educated adult? And can you go on in society and impact society in a way that you gain influence and power and the ability to be in those meetings to make a difference in terms of the direction that we take our society? So I thought for him, he was a great voice on the social front. He was also a great voice of accountability, saying, hey, man, it's really important for you to have your degree and not just hang your hat on the fact that you're going to make it as a player. And I think we see that a lot in our society, in hockey rinks, baseball fields, football fields, basketball courts, golf ranges, tennis courts, you name it, where you have crazy parents think their kid is the next Roger Federer, Tiger Woods, whatever the case may be, and they don't put their eggs in the proper basket. And I thought John had a good balance between the two.
Well said. Coach, you know, we love you. We thank you very much for taking a few minutes for us today. We hope you'll do it again sometime down the road. Enjoy game two and the rest of this series if we don't chat. And hopefully we'll run into you soon. Thanks, pal.
Guys, thank you so much. I guess as a guest for appearing, do I get like a round of golf with you guys or some of Bob's wine? What's the deal here?
You can get anything you want. All you got to do is pick up the phone. I don't like playing with Shannon.
Hey, listen, the last time Jack and I played, all we had was we had a legend with us. If you remember, Jack, we had a legend with us out in Halifax. We had the great Bob Cole with us. So, I mean, I'm not sure I can lower myself to play with you too, Bob, because after playing with Bob Cole, he's a legend and he's in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure what hall you're in.
Yeah, I'll tell you how much you'll lower yourself. You'll lower yourself all the way if it's at my club and I'm paying. That's what I know for sure. We'll arrange the golf game.
2 o'clock?
Anytime. And the winery coach, the winery is like, 20, 25 minutes from your house. So just come on over and we'll make sure you're properly nourished with alcoholic beverage. The coach, Jack Armstrong, this time on the podcast. We'll see you on Wednesday. Goodbye, everybody.
Hey guys, peace.